Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield, and we're glad you're here. Keep in mind that we are streaming live on biz1190.com all over the world, even as we speak. And today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. So check us out there. We're glad you're here. We have a great guest today. As always on Driven to Business, we enjoy talking to business people, people who have been successful in all areas of life, people who have things to share with us. And today's guest is certainly no exception. We have Jimmy Collins with us today. Jimmy, for many years, was an executive. He was the president and chief operating officer of the Chick-fil-A company. He's also an author. He wrote a book called Creative Followership, and we're going to talk about that today. And Jimmy, I'm so glad you're here. Thank you for being on Driven to Business.
Thank you, Eddie. I'm glad to be here. Satchel Paige said something that really appealed to me. You know who he was. He was a great black baseball player.
Right.
He was sort of the black version of Yogi Berra as far as philosophy goes. And one of the things he said as he was older, any time he was introduced, was, "I'm glad to be here. At my age, I'm glad to be anywhere." And I feel the same way.
Well, I'm not too far behind you, and I'm glad to be anywhere, too, and be able to walk around and talk. Jimmy, you've had a fascinating career, and it didn't start at Chick-fil-A. And interestingly enough, you're actually the son of sharecroppers. That's something very few of us can say. Tell us about that.
Well, not many people even know what a sharecropper is probably today. But a sharecropper was a poor farmer who rented property from the landowner, and he worked that property and shared the profits with the landowner. So there was a real incentive to do a good job because you could get half the profits. There are a lot of things that could go wrong in a situation like that, and nobody ever made much money, whether it was the farmer or the landowner. But I was born in the middle of a cotton field in an unpainted tenant house with no plumbing, no electricity. And, of course, no TV. I lived there until I began to attend school when I was a six-year-old. So my whole early life was flavored by that because all my relatives still lived on sharecropping farms. And as I grew up, I spent a lot of time there with my grandmother and my aunts and uncles.
Jimmy, you've had not only have you had an interesting career, just in talking to you, you've enjoyed your life and your career. And you know, reading your book, Creative Followership, and after meeting you and talking to you, it's more than just a book. This is how you live your life. And you start the book off talking about a passage over in Proverbs 27:18, and it says, "He who tends the fig tree will eat its fruit, and he who cares for his master will be honored." Tell us why that's important, why that's a cornerstone of your book.
That is actually the whole basis of creative followership. Now, bear in mind that my accumulation of experience that created this book, which was written after I retired from Chick-fil-A, is a series of learning experiences. And the earliest learning experience that I had where I really got the message of a creative followership was when I was in the fourth grade. Now, I was in the fourth grade, and it was 1946, right after the war, and things were beginning to return to normal. The hunky man would come to our school every afternoon at the end of classes. Now, Eddie, you're giving me a funny look over there.
Yeah, I'm waiting to hear the rest of the story, who that is.
do you know who the hunky man is?
No, I don't.
Well, you don't know what a hunky is.
No, I guess I don't.
Okay, well, a hunky is a vanilla ice cream bar dipped in chocolate. It's on a wooden stick and wrapped in a plain wax paper wrapper. Now, the hunky man would come every afternoon to the school, and he would sell ice cream in one of those three-wheel carts that had the insulated bin on front and two wheels and a pedaling bicycle behind it. And he had hunkies. Now, hunkies sold for a nickel, 5 cents. He also had Eskimo pies in the fancy foil wrapper, but they sold for a dime. And would you pay double just to get a fancy foil wrapper?
Not me.
I figured only the rich kids did that. But he would come in the afternoons, and the kids would gather out there, and they would get the ice cream, popsicles, and fudgesicles, too. I was out there one afternoon, and he started fussing at us kids. He said, "You kids, you're making a mess out here. Pick up all this trash, because the principal said, if we keep leaving this trash out here, I can't come anymore." I got to thinking about that. I was from not a very prosperous family. But when I had a nickel, I wanted to be able to buy a hunky. And I couldn't buy a hunky if he wasn't there. I thought, well, what can I do? I came up with a solution. I began to reach down and pick up the trash. I picked up the wrappers and the sticks, put them in the trash bin on the side of the hunky man's cart. And when all the other kids were gone, he said, "Come here, kid." Opened that lid, and he said, "Have a hunky free." I thought, ooh, man, I am on to something here. So the next day, when the bell rang, where do you think Jimmy was? I'm out there picking up wrappers and sticks and putting them in the hunky man's cart. And I thought, wait a minute. This is Proverbs 27:18. He who tends the fig tree will eat the fruit. He who tends the hunky man's cart we'll eat hunkies. You get it?
I do get it.
Okay. All right. Now then, we had some pretty smart kids that went to school there at Central Park. They saw what I was doing. And they had these thoughts. We're going to get in on this racket. Well, I shouldn't say racket. We're going to get in on this good deal that Jimmy's got. And they began to pick up trash. But the hunky man said, "No, Jimmy's my man." How about that, man? I've got the market cornered. I've got the franchise. Back to Proverbs. And he who cares for the master will be honored. He who takes care of the hunky man gets the franchise. And that's the way I put it together. Now, granted, all of this didn't happen in that one moment there at the hunky man's cart. But what happened in my life is I saw that if I was willing to provide these services, I would be rewarded. And if I was willing to care for my master, I would be recognized and honored. And that's the whole theme of creative followership.
You know, it is a unique idea, and I think unique in this regard. Many of us that start out in business, as I'm sure you know, we want to be the person that people are following. We don't want to follow anybody. But there's a basic flaw in that, isn't there?
Yes, there is. There is, because if we look at the overall picture, we're all called to be followers.
Right.
Now, some are leaders, and that's true, but the opportunities are there for the followers. And this is what I tell young people. The opportunities are unlimited. And, you know, when I was still at Chick-fil-A, I taught classes for supervisors that came from the franchisee stores.
Right.
They would come to the home office, and we'd have supervisor training for them. And one of the questions that I always asked every class, and usually it was my first question, was, how many of you guys work for a boss who doesn't like to do much? And, you know, they would look around the room, and they wanted to be sure what the other folks were saying or doing. And finally, one would sort of bashfully raise his hand. He says, I do. And you know what happened next? All of them raised their hands and said, "Yeah, I do." And this is what I told him, Eddie. I said, "Do you realize how fortunate you are to work for a boss that doesn't want to do very much? Think of all the opportunity that leaves for you to express yourself and to do things that add value and create worth in the organization. And when you do that, you make yourself so valuable, the boss is going to give you raises. You're going to get promotions, and you're going to be able to get ahead in your career."
you know, even in our business, which is very different than the business that you are such an instrumental part of, but you know, we deal with people. We're a distributor for vendors, and occasionally some of our guys will be complaining about the fact that our vendors are not providing quite as good of customer service as we think they should provide. But one way we've always looked at that in a positive light is, if they knew how to do everything right, they wouldn't need us. And it's our that gap they have provides a role for us to fill and to step in and really offer good customer service and keep those people going. And we'll continue this through the break, but in about a minute here, in your book, you talk about that when you were growing up and looking for role models of successful business people, they just weren't around, but you still managed to find people to inspire you in spite of that.
I did. And people asked me, who was your mentor? I said, I didn't have any, but I had a lot of good role models. I had my Grandma Waldrop.
Right.
And Grandma Waldrop was an Appalachian Mountain woman, and she told a lot of good stories about being, growing up in the mountains, but she also taught me this. She had great personal discipline, and she was so proud of the fact that there were two things she had never done. She had never been to a moving picture show, and she had never drank a Coca-Cola. Now, I have to admit that I do occasionally go to a movie, and I drink a lot of Cokes. But what I learned from Grandma Waldrop was the personal discipline that's so important to making a success in whatever we do.
You know, that's an interesting, when I was reading your book, I was thinking about, you know, as I was growing up, I was not around that I can remember any, at least not that I knew any really successful business people, but I did know a lot of strong fibered people that lived a happy life and were very worthwhile people, raised great families and lived by their principles. And you do learn a discipline about that. And you look at, even looking back now as an older person, you look back at that and you admire it. I mean, you can't help but admire that in someone. When we come back from the break, I want to talk to you. You worked very closely with Truett Cathy, and you've said how humble Truett was. And that, you know, that's a great thing here on Driven to Business we like to talk about, is the necessity of a good leader being humble. I'd like to come back and talk to you about that after the break. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. Plenty more to come, so stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. Our guest today is Jimmy Collins. Jimmy is the author of Creative Followership in the Shadow of Greatness. It's his journey to being the president of Chick-fil-A, and he's a great and interesting guest, and I'm so glad you're here. Jimmy, you worked for so many years with Truett Cathy, who's sort of an icon, particularly here in the state of Georgia, but really all over the world in many ways. And you have mentioned about before that of what an humble man Truett was. And can you talk to us about that a bit?
Sure. Humility is a quality we really admire in leaders, but we usually don't get many opportunities to see it.
Right.
Now, sometimes it's because it's not there. But other times we just don't get to see their personal behavior. But in my years of working for Truett, I was his chief follower, his right-hand man, you might say. I got plenty of opportunities to see it. Let me tell you a story about a great example of that. In 1979, we took all of our Chick-fil-A operators, that's our franchisees and their spouses, and home office staff and their spouses, to our annual seminar, which we held each year. And we went to Jamaica. Now, when we made arrangements for the hotel in Jamaica, I had gone down to see the hotel, but I hadn't been able to see very much because it was fully occupied. And the one thing I didn't get to see was the president's suite. And that's where we wanted to house Truett.
Right.
So when we got to the actual hotel with our seminar folks, and my wife and I went down to the suite, because there were two bedrooms in the suite. One was to be Truett's and one was to be mine. Olita and I went down and we walked into our room. This suite had a nice big parlor, and a dining area with a large table and lots of chairs. It was beautiful. And then we walked in our bedroom, and it was huge. Beautiful view of the beach. Nice big bathroom. And Olina and I said, wow, look at this. Let's go see what Truett and Jeanette have got. If we got this, wonder what theirs looks like. And we walked across the parlor into their bedroom. And when we walked in, Eddie, you wouldn't have believed it. It was tiny.
Oh, man.
It didn't even have a bath. Really, it didn't. There were two baths in the suite, but to get to the bath for that room, you had to go out into the parlor and use the sort of public room there.
Oh, man.
And we said, this cannot be. So my wife and I, we moved all of their stuff to our room and our stuff to their room because there were no more rooms in the inn. This was it. We had the place booked solid, and we had people off premises in houses. So I went up to the dining room to tell Truett that he was in the wrong room and I had moved him. On the way, I met one of our high-performing operators. He was furious. He said, Jimmy, I don't like my room. I don't have a good view. I'm looking out back toward the driveway. I want you to move me and put me on the beach side so I can see the beach. And I told him, we don't have any more rooms. This is it. You'll have to stay where you are. He was very angry with me. He said, I'm the highest performing operator in this organization. I deserve the best room. Sorry. I went on to the dining room and found Truett and Jeanette. And I told Truett, I said, Truett, you were in the wrong bedroom. They put you in the wrong one, but Olita and I have moved your things. And he said, well, the one we had was fine. Eddie, he had the room with no bathroom. He would have been the only person from Chick-fil-A there with a bedroom with no bath. And he said, it's fine. It's okay with me.
That is very, very telling. And plus the fact of how, and I'm not knocking the gentleman. I know people get upset with hotel rooms, but the idea that someone else is upset, they don't have the view, and you got a guy of Mr. Kathy's stature in there, and no bathroom.
And no window either. I forgot to mention that. There was no window in that room. But that's the way true it was. I always was concerned whenever we got ready to go anywhere because we traveled a lot together. If I didn't watch him, he'd grab my briefcase and carry it for me. And I didn't want him to carry my briefcase. But Truett is that kind of guy.
You know, on a little bit of a more cynical and funny note, a guy that I worked for one time, we were doing work for an industrial plants. And when we were going into a meeting, it's going to be kind of a harsh meeting, you know, of a problem had been there or something. When we would get in there, he would introduce me as his boss. So I got to take the heat from the guy. And he was a good guy, too. He sort of did it as a joke to poke at me, really, when we'd get in there. But it was a funny situation. You know, again, as a youngster coming up, because so much you talk in your book and in talking to you, you talk so much about when you were coming up and the things that you learned as a young person that carried you to the position you had at Chick-fil-A there. Can you share a little more about that with us?
Well, people ask me sometimes, Jimmy, when you talk, you tell these stories about when you were young. When I write, I tell stories about when I was young. And I said, yes, I do that because no matter what the audience is made up of, it's people who have all been young.
Right.
Some still are.
Right.
And so I feel like this is a way to communicate with them. For instance, I got my first job when I was 12 years old, delivering groceries at a neighborhood store. I delivered groceries on one of those bicycles with a big wheel in back and a little wheel up front under the big basket.
Right.
And the first day on the job, I figured out why Mr. Brown hired me. He hired me to do the things he didn't want to do. He didn't like to sweep the floor, carry out the trash, or dust the cans on the shelf, or fill the cooler with Coke bottles. He had other things to do. And I tell young people this, do what the boss does not like to do. That's the way you get ahead. Well, when I went to work for Truett Cathy, I made up my mind when I started work for him that that's what I would do. Now, in the early days, when people would come to the Chick-fil-A offices there, people knew who Truett was. He was a figure that everybody recognized, but they didn't know who I was. I was there, and he would introduce me, and Eddie, they would turn to me and say, Jimmy, what do you do? And I would answer, I do what Truett does not want to do.
Right.
You know what Truett would say? I don't like to do very much. Now, I never said that myself, you see, but Truett would say it. Sort of in good humor, humility, but also true. And here's what I learned. If I do the things that he does not like to do, and I do them well, it better prepares him to do the things that only he can do and that he does best. And this is the objective. Whenever you go to work for a boss, you want to empower the boss. We talk about empowering the employees. We need to empower the boss. And the way we do that is by doing the things that he does not like to do or that he does not like to do very well. Now, I also learned about that. And maybe we'll come back and talk about that in a little bit. But the idea here is to make yourself valuable. If you want to make more money, and most people do, and if you want to have a position where you have responsibility and you make a major contribution to the organization, that's the way you do it.
You know, a good friend of mine runs a ministry here in town to people who are street people who have not had a lot of success in life. And one of the things he tells me that they have not learned, and this is when he first told me this, is sort of an interesting thing to hear. He said, these are folks that never have learned the joy of being a servant. They've never learned how to do that. And he said, and he has them do things that are servant oriented to that effect. And I think it flows right in with what you're talking about here, because not only are you blessing the boss and making his life better, it actually makes your life better too. And not just in ways of material type ways, but even in I guess you could say spiritual type ways, as you learn the art and the joy of giving and serving under someone. We'll be more to talk with you about, Jimmy, after the break. You're listening to Driven to Business. We're streaming live on biz1190.com, and we'll be back. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. We're very glad you're here. We're having fun. We hope you are. By the way, we are streaming live on biz1190.com, and we will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. Also, our guest today, Jimmy Collins, you will see a link to his creative followership website on eddiemayfield.com during the podcast. So go there and check us out. Jimmy, one of the things you had said in your book that I have actually already stolen from you and quoted, I just go ahead and admit that to you. You were asked by someone what changed, what all did you see changed? What changed the most during your time there at Chick-fil-A? And you had a very fascinating answer to me. You said that I did. And that hits me so hard, just as a business person, because it ties in what you're talking about, humility and everything else, because, you know, if you've got to have some sense of humility to know that you need to change yourself some too. It's not just other people need to change. You need to change some. Tell us about that.
Okay. This was a question I was frequently asked as I approached retirement, and even as I was retiring, people would say, you know, you've been here 32 years. What changed the most? They really wanted to know
right.
about what had taken place.
Yeah, it's an honest question.
And I always told the same thing. I did. I changed the most. And you know, I could have never fulfilled my role as Truett's chief follower if I hadn't changed. As the business grew, it was absolutely essential that I changed. Not only that, but, you know, I had to make myself be, I had to become the person that I wanted to be.
Right.
And this is something that we have to get clear in our mind. What makes us is not doing. What makes us is being.
Right.
And people worry about, well, what do I do to get ahead? Or what do I do to be a leader? It's not doing. It's being. It's who are you going to be? Now, in the early days of Chick-fil-A, I'll have to tell you, I think, two stories to get this across, Eddie, if we can do that. we had a Chick-fil-A operator workshop one time. And this was in the early days of Chick-fil-A. And we had an operator to get up. This man was from Corpus Christi, Texas. And he's a guy who says what he thinks. And I like people like that.
Right, me
don't
too.
You?
Yep, I do.
He got up, and in this workshop, he told a story about me coming to visit his store. In the beginning, I was the one who did just about everything, you know, in the field. And he said, Jimmy came to my store, and all he did is find all of the things that I was doing wrong. He said he spent 2 days in my store telling me everything I did wrong that he could see. And then he went back to office and wrote me a 2-page letter covering everything that he forgot to mention while he was here. And he told this story in this room, and I'm sitting there, and I want to tell you, I appreciate honest people that tell the truth. I always encourage that. I was sitting there thinking, you know, my whole future with this organization depends on the cooperation and the support of these people that are running those stores. And if they think that way about me, are they going to be fully cooperative? And I decided right then, Eddie, I've got to change me. I've got to be more an encourager and less a critic. I'm a critic by nature. I mean, I can tell you everything's wrong. You show me a piece of paper, and I'll show you every misspelled word. You show me a spreadsheet, and any error on there, it's like it has a strobe light.
You fooled me because you don't come across that way.
By nature, I'm a critic. I had to remake myself, and I'm still on that journey. I'm not there yet, to become an encourager. And I worked at it. I still work at it to be the kind of person that encourages the people around me.
I've heard Ken Blanchard, a guy that wrote the 1-Minute Manager so many years ago that probably all of us read back in those days, and I've heard him ask at a speech he was giving, he said, who is just sick and tired of being encouraged? And the answer, obviously, is, you know, he also had another thing I was thinking about, I don't know if the guy was correct or not in what he said about it. You'll have to tell us that. But Blanchard had a term he called seagull management. He said, you know, it's when you fly in, make a bunch of noise, dump on everybody and fly off. He said, you know, that was not the kind of manager to be. But the corporation, it is so true that, I mean, we, as leaders, we just have to learn to encourage people. You get a lot more out of that than you do.
But, you know, encouragement has to take on the right form. Now.
Right, right.
And encouragement has to be sincere.
Right.
And honest. A lot of people get the idea that attaboys and pats on the back are encouragement. Not necessarily.
No, that costs nothing.
No. When I encourage people, I like to be specific about what I'm telling them. And I used encouragement as a method to illustrate for people the proper way to do things. You know, give you an illustration?
Yes, please.
Okay. Let me give you an illustration on waffle fries. You ever eat waffle fries at Chick-fil-A?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, when I would go into a Chick-fil-A
too
store.
Too often, I might say.
No, you don't eat. You can't eat too many of them.
I'm glad to hear that.
When I would go into a Chick-fil-A store out of Atlanta, seldom did the people know me. I was not a figurehead person there. I worked in the shadow of greatness.
Right.
In Truett's shadow. And I liked it there, quite frankly. And when I would go into a store, I would go in and order food. And then if I'd sit down and eat the food, and they thought I was just a regular customer because I'd do it when I first got there. If it was perfect, I would recognize it. But I only recognized it when it was perfect. And on this day, I had to order waffle fries, and they were perfect. So I went back to the kitchen. I said, who made my waffle fries? You know, about that tone of voice, so they wouldn't know what I was going to do. And finally, after pointing at each other, I found out who did it, and the guy said, I did it. Well, usually people are more bashful than that, but this guy was pretty bold. And I said, well, you come over here, and I got everybody in the kitchen that I could get to surround me. And I said, I want y'all to look at these waffle fries. What do you think about them? And the guy that made them said, they look all right to me. Now, usually they would find something wrong that I had never seen. But I said, I want y'all to all see what this guy has done. And I took the bag and showed it to him. I said, what do you think? They said, well, it's a bag of waffle fries. I said, it's full. Do you see? It's full. When it's full, Customers like it. They think they got their money's worth. All right, I took one out, and I said, now look at this. What does it look like? They said, like a waffle fry. I said, look at it. It's golden brown, and it's crisp. And then I dumped the bag out on the table, and I said, look at that. There are no chips and no broken ones and no little pieces in here. They're all complete. And I said, y'all come over here and touch these. And I said, put your hands on there. They said, well, they're warm. Yeah, they're supposed to be warm. You know, that's the way the customers like them. And then I picked up one, and I chomped down and went, you know, make a lot of noise. I said, oh, that is so good. Oh, it's crisp on the outside and juicy and moist and warm on the inside. And I turned to the guy that made them, and I said, you make waffle fries like this, and people won't be able to wait to get back in here and get some more. As a matter of fact, they probably won't even be able to wait till the next day. They'll want to come back the same day and get some more. Now, ask you this question. When I left there, do you think those people knew how to make waffle fries?
Yes.
They did.
They did. And not only that, they wanted to.
Yes.
Because they were now proud of it. And the guy that did it was proud of what he did. That's it's a hold up a great example in front of a guy. You know,
I could have dumped out six bags of them and said, don't do this, don't do that. And they wouldn't have remembered it.
No, that's right. You know, you talk in your book a lot, and you talk in person. We talk about leadership in general and being leaders. But, you know, and I like you've got a definition of leadership. I don't know. I've seen John Maxwell use the same definition. Jimmy, I don't know if he stole it from you. But he probably did. That's the way I look at it. He probably stole it from you. The idea that the definition of a leader is someone who has followers. You know, as simple as that is, a lot of us forget that, don't we?
That's the only definition of a leader.
Right.
You know, I have seen whole books written about the definition of a leader, but you don't need any more words than that. A leader is someone with followers, pure and simple.
Right.
And this is what I urge people to practice. You know, you don't need a lot of leaders. I've heard people say, well, we need more leaders. No, usually there are plenty of leaders. We just need better leaders, and we need better followers.
Right.
And when a leader has followers that support him or her and encourage them, that's something we forget.
Yes.
And they support him. It makes things happen.
And it makes him a better leader, too, a lot better leader.
And one of the important things to remember is when you are working for someone and your boss, you want to learn to do the things he doesn't do well. Now, when I was in the seventh grade back at Central Park Elementary School, sixth and seventh grade, on recess, all the boys played softball. And we had an unusual rule in our softball there at Central Park. If you took two strikes and you missed the ball, you could choose someone to take your third strike, and if they hit the ball, you could run. I'm not very athletic. You can tell that by looking at me, you know. I'm not now, and I never was. But I enjoyed playing with the guys, and I always, when I took that second strike, I picked Harry Blondheim to take my third strike. Harry was the best athlete in the school. And when he took my third strike, I always got to run the bases. And I remembered that when I went to work. And I advise people, when you need help, get an expert. Get somebody that can really do it well for you. And I thought with my boss, you know, this might work in reverse. If I can do it better than he can, maybe I should do it. Well, you have to use tact when you do this. And you can't just walk up to the boss and say, you don't know how to do that, let me do it for you. But what you do is you go to the boss, and you say, you know, we will be most productive when we both do what we do best. Truett was an excellent speaker. When I relieved him of time when he'd go out and make speeches, it made best use of his time, and it made good use of mine.
You know, listening to you talk, it's making me more and more of appreciative of a gentleman that's sort of my right-hand man in our business. And not that I don't already appreciate him. I do very much appreciate him, but I just sitting listening to you talk. He does many of the things that I'm, and there's quite a few things I'm not very good at, I can tell you that. And he is very good at it. And he steps right up, and it's such an honor to work with someone like that. And it's actually very humbling for me that you have someone like that working for you. We have one more segment, Driven to Business. Fascinating guest today, Jimmy Collins. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Don't go anywhere. Stick around. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business. The time has flown by today, and that's not because of me. It's because we have an excellent guest, Jimmy Collins, who wrote Creative Followership. Jimmy was the president and chief operating officer of Chick-fil-A for many years and has an organization now called Creative Followership. You can find, again, the links to Jimmy's website on eddiemayfield.com, where, by the way, there is a podcast of today's program, and you should check that out. Jimmy, to talk about Chick-fil-A just for a moment. It's one of those companies that a very small set of companies, I might say, that doesn't just have customers. Chick-fil-A has fans. It literally has fanatic fans. How in the world did you guys go about that?
Well, It's hard to say all of the things that make something come together, because every large thing is made of lots of little pieces.
Right.
But you have to decide what is important. And the two of the things that are really important at Chick-fil-A are people and consistency. Now, I could give you a lot of illustrations of both of those, but let me give you an illustration of people. In the early days of Chick-fil-A, we had a man who joined us at Chick-fil-A. His name was Huey Woods. And Huey was in charge of HR. He was responsible for the selection of people to work at the home office and also to be the Chick-fil-A operators or franchisees.
Right.
And Huey had a unique question that he asked himself before he selected any Chick-fil-A operator. And that question was, would I want my children to work for this person? Now, you think about that.
That's a fascinating question. It's a very in-depth question.
It is. Now, I didn't know if Chick-fil-A was still practicing this or not. I've been retired 12 years now. But I went to Andrew Cathy, who is Truett's grandson, who's in charge of that area of responsibility now, and I asked him, do you still use this whenever you are choosing a Chick-fil-A franchisee? And he said, yes, we do.
You know, Jimmy, and I know part of the answer to this next question you've already answered is hiring. There's no question about it that we as business people need to be very careful who we hire. I'll just confess to you, I made mistakes early in my career of paying so much. We're in a technical business, and I paid so much attention to people's technical expertise that I would overlook other things that we should not have overlooked. And it caused a lot of problems inside our company at one time or another. Not only a lot of stress for me, but a lot of stress on our organization. And we began, and you know, someone would be working for us, and we would have to terminate them. And then some secretary would say, you know, I knew that guy wasn't going to make it the minute he walked in here. And said, well, then why didn't you tell me that? And said, well, you didn't ask, kind of thing, you know. So what we literally began doing after that, I hope I'm not giving away all of our hiring secrets here to my supplying for us. I guess I might be. But, you know, when we have someone come in and interview with us, what we do, we sort of purposely leave them in the lobby area a little bit. And we have them, and we have a very friendly lady that kind of controls that area out there and just a great conversationalist. And she just engages them in conversation. And later we ask her, how friendly was this guy? Was he friendly? Could he carry on a conversation? You know, if he's going to sit there and sullenly be sullen and not answer, well, that's how you're going to treat our customers as well. And we don't want someone like that in our organization. And much less, we're much smaller and a much less sophisticated organization than Chick-fil-A. But that's something we did in our organization, even to try and promote a customer-friendly culture where we're only hiring people like that.
Well, at Chick-fil-A, we found that some of the most valuable feedback that we got in selecting people came from the driver of the car that went to the airport to pick the people up or take them back to the airport, the receptionist, the people in the cafeteria that served them at lunchtime, and just not the senior people, but the other people that were around them during the time when they were there.
Right.
You know, you can impart knowledge, and you can teach skills, but you cannot change a person's personality,
right,
or their character.
Right.
And you have to be willing to pick people on personality and character. Sometimes they might be a little weak in some of the technical areas you mentioned.
Right, right.
Or in some of those areas, and you'd still be better off with them.
Yeah, I think a great attitude, great personality that's willing to learn, that's smart, and all that, can go a lot further than someone who's smart with a bad attitude.
Exactly.
No matter what they do. You know, I heard a speech one time by the president of a former president now of Southwest Airlines, and they talked about their hiring process. And kind of like what you just had said in the cafeteria, what they would do, they would purposely arrange if they had a candidate they were considering to be there during lunch, and then they would send him to the cafeteria by himself. But they were having people watch him. And they wanted to know, how did he react? How did he interact with the people in the cafeteria line, with the cashiers? How does this guy respond? Because they know that's how he's going to act to their customers. Mm-hmm. And again, you're just seeing what is this guy, and what's this guy's default personality when he's not really on? What's he like? Is he a friendly person? If he is, then that's somebody we want in our organization. You know, aside from the hiring, though, I mean, part of the magic of Chick-fil-A, I think, is when you walk in, there's a certain culture there of customer service. Jimmy, do you have anything for our listeners, business people, that obviously hiring's the most important thing, but other than that, to just inspire a positive culture within your organization?
Well, yes. You know, when you think about goodwill, you can build it or you can destroy it.
Right.
If you have a customer who has been to your business once or twice and they have a bad experience, they probably won't come back.
Right.
But if they've been there 20, 30, 40, 50 times and they've always had a good experience, they will forgive you if you have built up goodwill equity.
Right.
Now, building up goodwill equity is something that the folks at Chick-fil-A are very good at.
That's a great term.
And whenever you think about what makes the difference is the people. You've got to be focused on the people. And, you know, at Chick-fil-A, they sell chicken. I've heard people say Chick-fil-A's in the people business because they concentrate so much on people. They're really not. They're in the chicken business. But they are very sensitive to the needs of people, not only the customers, but also the employees. If you don't have happy employees, you're not going to have happy customers.
Do you, in about a minute or so that we have left here, do you think, I think though a lot of people will find your ideas of creative followership interesting, but there are people, and we discussed this briefly earlier, who would say, they may not say it, they will think it, that being a follower is somehow demeaning. Do you have an answer for that?
I'll tell you what I found. In the early days, when I was pursuing a leadership role.
Right.
And I did. You know, I was convinced if I read enough books, listened to enough tapes, and went to enough seminars, I could learn to be a leader.
Right.
And I was going to be one.
Right.
Well, what I found is there's a lot of competition out there. And it's a cutthroat world. But, you know, there are not many people competing to be followed. And so I found out, if I'm willing to practice creative followership, there's a lot more opportunity open. When I wanted to be in charge, what I was doing was actually undermining my own methods. And I didn't accomplish anything. But what I found out was if I was willing to be a follower, a creative follower, there was no limit to what I could accomplish.
Jimmy, I appreciate so much you being on the program today. You're an inspiring person, and it's been great getting to know you and having a chance to sit down with you and talk, and I think our listeners will be very very blessed by hearing you talk today and will be able to take something back to their businesses. I know I'm going to take things back to my business based on what you said. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
On the program. You've been listening to Driven to Business. We're here every Saturday on WAFS Biz 1190. I'm Eddie Mayfield, and until next week, bye-bye.
You- You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.